Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online, on DAB, and on your smart speaker. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. The usual suspects have returned to the fray. The Guardian, Gordon Brown, John Major, Tony Blair. And guess what they want? That's right, a government of national unity. Now, where did we hear that before? Just trying to remember, I think it might have been... during the Brexit stalemate of last year, when they decided that the government couldn't do anything, so they should all come back and rescue us from ourselves. What an absolute load of old nonsense. What is it about these people that makes them think anyone wants them back? John Major, whose specialities included watching cricket at Lord's and consulting with Edwina Curry. Gordon Brown, who sold off all our gold at record low prices and thought deregulating the banks was a great idea, thanks to Fred the Shred. Tony Blair, who took us all into an illegal war in Iraq, for which we are still paying the price. And lastly, The Guardian, which is happy to employ journalists who think it's fair game to go after our Prime Minister as he fights for his life in the intensive care ward at St Thomas's Hospital. I'd have to say, folks, thanks, but no thanks. We'll call you if we need you. The very same people are arguing that there is some form of power vacuum at the heart of government, despite the fact that cabinet responsibility remains intact, Dominic Raab has been deputised as the acting Prime Minister, and the programme of prescription and recovery continues. Don't be fooled by the lefties, people. Let's stick with our elected government. That's right, the one that won by a landslide, the one that was chosen by the people of this country to actually run this country, not the people who lost, who the people of this country do not want running the country. I heard it all yesterday when John McTiernan, Tony Blair's former political advisor, suggested that not only should we get Keir Starmer into Downing Street, but we should get Sadiq Khan in there and David Lammy. I mean, for God's sake. As ever, we want to hear from you today as well. We'll be attempting to answer your questions, your concerns, while at the same time giving you the voice to tell us what you're seeing, what you're hearing, and how you're all doing as well, because that's very important. 0344 499 1000. We'll be going over to Dubai to see how lockdown UAE style is doing, and we'll head to the USA as President Donald Trump has threatened to stop all US funding for the World Health Organization because they're a bit too close to China. And we're getting a special guest appearance from TV chef James Martin. As ever, we are live streaming on YouTube, on Facebook and on Twitter, so you can watch us now as well as listening to us. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, on the fastest growing radio station on the planet. It is, of course, Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Now, I'm delighted to say we're going to start the show off this morning with an old friend of the show, someone that we haven't spoken to for quite some time, but who was a very regular guest in the tent of Common Sense down on College Green all those months ago when Brexit was the only thing we thought about. It is, of course, Kate Hoey. Kate, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike, and what a wonderful summary that was.
Well, thank you very much indeed. I mean, I have to say, you know, when you see Tony Blair and Gordon Brown and John Major wheeling themselves out as if they're going to be the kind of the superheroes of the modern era, because only they know how to run the country in a time of trouble, you just can't help but think, have we gone back to November?
Well, yes, and it, you know, it, I suppose it was to be expected at some time because that's exactly the kind of way that certain people in the media behave, and then those politicians, those kind of either failed politicians or people who've gone off and finished their stint, you know, are look like they'd like to come back. But I don't think, you know, I think one of the things that's happened during this whole lockdown is people, because they're at home and they're listening much more to television and the media, they're becoming much more, I would even say, cynical about the media, particularly the mainstream media.
Oh, for sure.
Why, obviously, channels, you know, radio shows like yours are getting more people because we're just so fed up. Even I, yesterday, after watching the briefing, I had to just tweet something, which probably wasn't very kind, but I said that you know, I was beginning, it might be the lockdown, but I was beginning to lose patience with Robert Peston.
I mean,
I find the whole way that those journalists every day just want to find something to be negative about.
Yes.
And, you know, the country at the moment, we need to be being positive.
Right. Also, as I've said many times, and I sort of kicked off the Robert Peston backlash last week, I think, when I said, look, journalists' jobs at the moment is to get information. It is not to try and pin somebody out or to try and find fault with something the government hasn't done. Surely it's about finding information for people who need information. And that's our job. Our job is to be the conduit between government ministers and the rest of the country.
Yes, and the kind of questions they asked are not really designed to be the questions that the public would be asking. We hear the questions the public are asking when we get sometimes on radio shows, people, you know, doctors or medical people appearing and asking questions. It just always looks like they're out to see which one of them can be the one that gets the headline or wants it for their story that night.
I mean, I call them the three stooges, you know, Laura Kunzberg, Beth Rigby and Robert Peston, who always get to ask the first three questions, and they always ask the same question.
Well, at least Mike, at least the chap from Sky was able last, you know, to actually send good messages to the Prime Minister,
yeah,
which I don't think Beth Rigby did. However, let's not... all I was saying really was, Mike, that I think the public are becoming more aware of all of this, because most people go about their daily lives and don't listen all the time to, you know, to watch television and so on. And now they are seeing it regularly. I think they're able to make up their own minds. Mind you, I'm only starting to listen to the news now once a day.
Yes.
I just really fed up with a lot of it.
Yeah, I mean, how are you coping, generally speaking, with the whole situation? Because we haven't really spoken to you for a while.
No, it's I'm you know, in some aspects of it that you can actually enjoy. I'm very lucky because I'm I'm in Northern Ireland at my brother's farm, so I'm able to get out into the fields and watch. And one of the lovely things at the moment is, of course, with spring coming, you can see things actually literally growing in front of you. So that's rather nice.
Yes.
But in terms of the overall lockdown, you know, I'm as frustrated as everyone is, but you know, we have to go along with it. I just hope that at some stage some hope is given as to when it might be able to be stopped or brought down a little bit. For example, garden centres. I really don't understand why garden centres can't be open, but that's just my own personal.
Well, it does seem as though, and when I was driving through South London yesterday on my way home, there's an awful lot of people out on the streets in London. I'm led to believe in other parts of the country it's not quite so busy because people are staying home. But I think the problem with London is it's very overcrowded. There's lots of people living very close together in very small pieces of accommodation, and they're going out shopping, and it just looks like there's a lot more people out and about.
Yeah, well, I spend a bit of my time ringing former constituents who I know in Vauxhall who are on their own at this time. And also, you know, I think of so many people who are living in very tiny flats with children, overcrowded, that don't even have a balcony to sort of stand out on.
Right.
And that, you know, I think there's a limit to how long it can go on. But obviously, we hope that what we're seeing now is the effects of that 3 weeks lockdown. By end of this week, hopefully we will see some pattern which is showing things are improving, and we can all hope for that. But I think everyone handles it differently, and I'm actually being able to read and do things that I haven't had time to do for 30 years.
I know. Funnily enough, I found myself talking to people on the phone that I haven't spoken to for a long time, just because I tended not to do that so much when I was busier. But now I've got a bit more time for sort of interaction, as it were, on the phone, which is great. What about Boris? Let's talk about Boris Johnson, because you worked very closely with Boris in the City Hall when he was mayor. I think we're all feeling slightly better about it all today.
Well, I mean, it was such a shock. I suppose not so much that he got the symptoms, but there was the fact that they, you know, then when we heard he was taken into hospital, of course, I knew he was going into the best hospital. I mean, Thomas's was in my constituency. I know it well. It's absolutely wonderful. But the shock of knowing that he was gone into intensive care, I mean, I just felt numb, really, and I think a lot of people did. It was feeling a lot better today. I hope we're looking to hear the next bulletin, and you know, knowing Boris as I do, and as many many people do who've worked with him, he has got such a strength of optimism and belief, not just in himself but in the whole country, that you know he will fight it, and he will be, when he does recover, he will be desperate to get back to being the figurehead at the top of our government at a time like this when we do so need that kind of optimism and resilience.
And it tells you something about his charisma and his leadership qualities, that when he isn't there, it does look like a very much less good government, but that doesn't mean that it is. You know, the fact that Dominic Raab is not the same sort of, you know, charismatic figure as Boris does not mean that he can't do the same job, does it?
We have, and you know, this again where the journalists really annoy. You'd think they would know, and they do know, but they're playing politics in a stupid way. We have a cabinet government. We have a cabinet that has response. Each of them's got their responsibilities. They've got these committees that are coming together to work on the issue. But what be missing? Well, that, I mean, I remember so much at City Hall whenever there was a day I was doing the sports stuff. And, I mean, we didn't have too many bad stories, but occasionally on some of the other areas there'd be a very bad story or a bad headline, and everyone would go into the sort of meeting feeling a bit, oh, dear, this is going to be, you know, this is bad. And Boris would be there, and Boris would be, you know, just so sort of gung-ho about it, and so much that you came out feeling actually that there was a good thing that had come out of whatever the bad news story was. And he does have that capacity to, you know, really motivate people and to make people. The great thing about him was he was a great delegator too. So even though he's been the Prime Minister and is in charge and is at the top, you know, he has people around him who he will have made very clear what he wants done and how he wants it done. And it's that ability to, you know, to get people to be loyal to him. I remember first just after Ken Livingstone had finished at City Hall and going in there and the new mayor, and I remember thinking, I wonder what all these people who work there and have been working, you know, hundreds of people at City Hall who worked for Ken Livingstone, will this be difficult? Will, you know, and within a few days, you know, Boris had just become someone who, because he stopped and talked to people, he would go walk around the building. He got people to feel that he really was on their side as well as London.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, he's very popular with all sorts of people, and the sorts of people that the left of the political strain in this country can't quite stand. I mean, looking at the Guardian front page this morning, a picture of Dominic Raab, the headline says, "Power vacuum fears as Prime Minister remains in intensive care." Now, I've read the story, right? There is nothing in that story where anyone is quoted as saying there's fears over a power vacuum. There's nobody saying it except for the Guardian, literally.
I mean, of course, politicians will have disagreements even within the cabinet. But, you know, at a time like this, the anyone really thinks that there are going to be members of the cabinet who are going to sort of try and be different and put their own personal ego, I just do not believe that could possibly happen at this time in our country's, you know, problems that we have. And the media love it. And of course, I'm afraid, I genuinely just don't read The Guardian anymore because I just see the word Guardian and it makes me feel quite...
In fact, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to rip it up. I'm going to rip The Guardian up right now, live on the radio. It's absolute rubbish. I mean, even if I was editing it, I'd say to them, for God's sake, get some MP. I don't care how far back on the back benches the MP is. I don't care. I'm just absolutely not going to stand for this unless you get me a quote from someone who says, we're worried about a power vacuum.
Yeah. And they're finding that very difficult because, you know, in a way, party politics has actually gone out of the window with a lot of the politicians at the moment, which is good. I mean, I was very pleased that the new Labour leader immediately, whatever he said, since immediately talked about, you know, giving support to the government. But of course, you can ask questions, but giving support is really, really important at this time. We have to have a united front. It doesn't mean you can't ask questions. And I really admire you, Mike, for having Peter Hitchin on, because I think it's important that people do have that debate. But you need that debate in a way that allows common sense and not just the sort of hysteria
Of... I mean, I'm certainly not advocating that we take everything that the government says at these briefings hook, line and sinker, but be constructive and ask them proper questions rather than things that have happened already that you think you can tell them they didn't do the right way. It's nonsensical. Because, I mean...
Yes, and asking to sort of say exactly when something will happen in the future, when they can't possibly do that.
Well, this has been an extraordinary story. I've never known anything like it. I've never seen a story move so quickly, change its direction, you know, change everything about its nature. You know, one day this is a good idea, the next day it's a bad idea. You know, that's just the way this story is going. It's the way the virus is spreading. And, you know, I don't understand why people can't get that into their heads, you know?
Yes, it's again, they're wanting to just always have something that's different or new. And the 24-hour news cycle doesn't help. I mean, even 30 years ago, if this had happened, we wouldn't have been in this position. We'd have got one kind of statement probably a day
from
government. But yes, I mean, I do feel that the country will feel much, much better when we know that Boris is back. And
I agree with that.
In charge again, because it's just that feeling that he's gone through so much. I mean, when you think what he's gone through in the last year, it's amazing his stamina.
Incredible, really. Absolutely incredible. And let's talk just finally about London, because obviously you were a London MP. You lived here. You were the sports advisor to Boris when he was mayor of London. One of the things that I literally almost laughed out loud at was John McTiernan yesterday telling me that he thought Sadiq Khan should somehow be involved in running the country. And I thought to myself, well, it'd be nice if he could run London, because the story this morning saying 14 transport workers have now died after contracting the coronavirus. And a lot of people think that his his rescheduling of the way that the tubes were running, the way that the buses are run, the fact that they will not apparently now in Transport for London allow people to enter buses at the back instead of at the front, you know, he's not exactly playing a blinder here.
I think Sadiq would have been much better to have concentrated since he became mayor on London issues and the issues that concern Londoners. What he spent an awful lot of his time, unfortunately, was making announcements and pronouncements and going off to Brussels and meeting EU people and playing the kind of as if he was the alternative to the government on the issue of the European Union.
Yeah.
And, you know, London is a huge, huge city. It needs constant, literally every minute of the day, somebody looking at what's happening and coming. And I don't think the solutions, I only saw it on what I saw on television and on Twitter, but it did seem ridiculous that the tubes were so packed in the morning simply because they had stopped running. I don't know why they couldn't have found a situation where they put them all on in the morning as usual and then took some off during the day, but I mean, I'm not that, you know, there are probably technological reasons why that.
Well, the argument behind it apparently is that they've got so many people that are off work with sickness or whatever that they can't run enough trains. I'm not buying that, because you've got plenty of people that can drive trains. You could bring back some retired train drivers. It was obviously a move that was made for some reason or other, but all you know is it was a very dangerous move.
Well, it certainly seemed to have meant that people being told to social distance couldn't possibly social distance when they were actually going to work to do the kind of jobs that were needed and necessary and vital. And, you know, the other thing I suggested, but I don't think anyone took it up, was, you know, the London taxis, who have been brilliant, London taxi drivers. I mean, they should have been being brought in to help with taking staff to hospitals in the morning so they didn't have to go on tubes. I mean, the cab drivers must be earning so little at the moment that they would have done that for practically nothing. And these sort of... But, you know, I'm an ex-MP now, so I can think all these things and then I can share the frustration of the public when they look and think, why aren't they doing that?
Yes, exactly right. Well, you were very much missed, Kate, and lovely to talk to you again.
Well,
thank you.
When this is all over.
Yes, well, we must do that lunch finally when it's all over. I'll be the first one at the gates of every restaurant that's about to open, for sure. Kate Hoey, former Labour MP for Vauxhall, former sports advisor, of course, to Boris Johnson when he was mayor of London as well. We've got lots more to do. We've got loads of people to talk to, including, of course, a very special guest from Dubai who'll be coming up a bit later on. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Watch us live on YouTube. We are live streaming the show right now. Get on it. Subscribe it. Like it. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Got a great tweet here from somebody who says, Paul says this: can we have an 8 p.m. countrywide tearing up of the Guardian event? We could all go to the front door and rip it up at the same time. Downside is we'd have to buy the wretched thing. Well, that's a great idea, I have to say. Now, I'm delighted to tell you now that the next guest on this show, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, is someone that I can say I've admired for a very, very long time. In fact, for her entire life. And that's, I think, the only time I could ever say that, because I've known her for her entire life, because I made her. Her name is Emma Graham, and she is now reporting in from Dubai. Emma, a very good morning to you.
Hi, how are you, Dad?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you so much for making time for us, because I know you're still very busy out there working for CNBC. But Dubai is in a massive lockdown. We spoke about it the other night. And tell us what it's like there. Tell us what the position is and whether you're allowed, what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do.
Well, I'm a big fan of the show and of you, of course, so thank you for the opportunity. It's an honour.
Very good.
So it's very serious here in Dubai, actually. I kind of think I misinterpreted coming back. I should have maybe stayed in London and had a bit more freedom. But we're on a 24-hour lockdown here in Dubai, so that was put in place on Saturday at 8 p.m., and it's going to last for about 2 weeks.
Okay.
They may extend it, which makes me a bit nervous. And there's a citywide sanitation program in place during this lockdown, so Dubai residents cannot leave their houses. And but it's basically only essential tasks, which is doctors, food shopping or pharmacists. So it's pretty serious here.
Right. So does that mean if you do go out for food, you're only allowed to go out like once a week or something?
Yeah. So, I mean, they can't police it to that level. But what they've said is when you do go out, you need to fill out a permit through the Dubai Police Department.
Right.
And you basically put your car license plates in that, or you kind of put your address in that and say, OK, I'm going to this shop down the road. And they're tracking you with using AI, apparently. So if you go further than you say you're going, they do something to you. I'm not sure. I haven't found out yet.
Well, let's hope you don't find out, because I think you should just stay where you are. And how are you coping with it as far as being on your own? Because it means you basically can't see anybody. You can talk. I mean, you and I are speaking quite a lot, obviously, but you can't actually physically see anyone.
Thank God. Yeah, no, we can't see anyone. I've adapted to the House Party app, which has been great. So obviously, we've been doing calls with, you know, my brother, your son in LA, and the kids in the UK. So that's a lifesaver. And I've also managed to do a lot of home workouts on my carpet, which has been great. But CNBC is keeping us busy here. We've got reporters out doing various things. So, and even though I'm an essential worker, I'm not as essential to be in the office. So working from home brings new challenges.
Yes,
as
and
we
you're,
all know.
And you're the only CNBC representative in Dubai at this moment, right?
Yeah, yes, I am. So just kind of reporting on that story. And I think the AI angle is really interesting. And I really admire what the government's done, because they've cracked down pretty quickly here.
Right.
And I think we had something over like 2,000 cases, but they've taken it very seriously here. We're not allowed out without masks or gloves. And even the schools, I think, are doing a great job. I have friends with kids here, and the kids have to wake up at 7 a.m., be on their kind of Zoom calls or whatever with their teachers and say, hi, I'm here. Most of them do go back to sleep afterwards, but they are being asked to be present and be awake, which I hear for my brothers is not as easy.
Well, you know, I tell you what, if it was 7 p.m., you'd be lucky to get them up by. But, I mean, here's the thing. I suppose that's a good system, because it means that it's effectively they're taking the register, aren't they, of making sure that the kids are actually still doing school work. Because it is difficult, I think, for a lot of children in this country, because they're so used to going to school. And if there's no online presence, really, which is organised, they're never going to bother doing it.
Absolutely. I mean, at my age of 29, you know, I can't even make myself disciplined. I don't know how you're supposed to do it at age 16. So, you know, at least they don't drink red wine yet. But I think it's very difficult for them. So I think what they're doing here, and these schools, a lot of them are private schools, but they are really taking it seriously, making them, you know, submit assignments day to day and really making sure these kids get the education that their parents are rightly paying for.
And what does it mean for the businesses of Dubai? Because obviously there's an awful lot of UK-based businesses that have businesses in that part of the world. There's also a lot of banking business. There's a stock exchange going on, presumably. There's traders. Are people able to go to work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, Dubai is a massive hub here in the Middle East, and you've got HSBC, Standard Chartered, Citi, all these banks here. Nobody's going into work. They're not considered essential employees, but they are working from home unless they have to be in the office. I think obviously Dubai has been in a slowdown for quite a long time, and we're seeing the strangest thing I'm seeing is the property market. I mean, obviously it's in such a downturn, but there's still people building 7 buildings outside my flat, I can see, which is bizarre, because I mean, I don't see how these workers are essential workers, but perhaps that's another issue for another time. So
yes.
We'll see definitely some economic downturn in the city, I'm sure.
And what about the
whole
sort of,
world, we'll see.
And what about the sort of British expat community there? Because there's a lot of people that go to work in Dubai from here. Are they staying there, or are they coming back, or what?
Yeah, I mean, so the most interesting thing about Dubai is it's about 80% expat. It's only 20% Emirati. So most of my friends who I know here, who are, you know, Australian, Brits, everything, they're staying here. I think it's safer to be here, and I think a lot of us feel that way because
the government has taken such stringent action and just feel it's safer. And obviously for our jobs, we're still required to be here to work from home. But I don't think any of us could have realized how serious and how locked down the country could be. So we are the only emirate to be this locked down, but I'm hearing that Abu Dhabi and the other six emirates might be more seriously locked down as well to contain the country.
Well, when I last saw you, which was at the beginning of March when you were in London, I don't think any of us thought that this is where we would be in a month's time. I don't think any of us considered that we would be literally just sitting in our apartments and houses for the rest of time, not knowing really when that was going to end.
Absolutely. I mean, I was on the beach in Jumeirah about 3 weeks ago, having a wonderful time and thinking, I'm really glad I'm back in Dubai with the sun. And, you know, we have a building, a pool that's shut. I mean, everything is shut, every gym, even the building gyms. So we have to make a new normal here in Dubai, I think.
Yes, exactly right. And what about testing in that part of the world? What are they doing about that? Did they test you only if you have symptoms?
Yes and no. So there are testing centres they have in place, and basically all over every building they're saying, if you feel that you have symptoms, go in, get tested. Everybody pretty much has private healthcare here, but they also are doing statewide testing in densely populated areas, which is why they're doing this shutdown. So they'll go to places, especially where a lot of the migrant workers are, and they'll go and test everyone there. So
right.
Obviously a lot of issues with overcrowding in different parts of Dubai. So they're pretty good about that, which is positive.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask you a business question now, so I'm hoping you won't blame me for putting you on the spot. But you cover the oil business quite a lot out there. We're seeing oil prices and petrol pump prices dropping here in London, and presumably the rest of the world as well, because usage is way down. We've got trains running at sort of 5% capacity. You know, there's obviously a lot less fuel being used. There's no aviation fuel being used. What effect is that happening? What effect is that having, rather, on the region's oil businesses?
Oh, it's detrimental. I mean, this economy and Saudis, you know, the Gulf economies are penned to the oil revenue that they make. Unfortunately, I mean, we are going to see an OPEC meeting tomorrow and then a G20 meeting of energy ministers on Friday, which is all very boring. But I think you may see some deals happening in which these producers like Russia, US and Saudi will all cut production. But the problem is we have no demand, as you rightly say. Nobody's flying. Nobody's going anywhere. Nobody's using trains. So The issue is, I think we'll continue to see low prices, and that's only going to have a negative effect on these economies that are going to try and diversify and have been trying to diversify with, you know, Saudi, with tourism, as you've spoken about on your show before, and that sort of thing. But right now, I think it's pretty dire.
It really is. Well, so what are you going to do for the rest of the day? How does that look for you?
Oh, well, I'm going to work out a little bit and then cook something and just try to stay calm, collected, and I'll probably call you tonight so you can, you know, give me some amazing feedback on our interview.
Okay, well, I shall do so. Lovely to hear your voice, and thank you so much for talking to us. Emma Graham, CNBC, Dubai, is how you do the sign-off, if you wish.
Thank you. Emma Graham, CNBC, Dubai. Thank you, Talk Radio.
Thank you very much indeed. My delightful daughter. I couldn't be more proud. She is in Dubai. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we all have to face. And I know that I'm not alone here when I say there are parts of this which are very difficult. You miss people from your own family. You know, she does live in Dubai and she would not be seeing me on a daily basis. But normally speaking, we would see each other every couple of months or something. She would come back to London. I was planning to go over there at some point. In fact, I was planning to take the whole family over there at some point, but that's obviously not going to happen. So if you are missing members of your family in the same way that I am, you know, I do have sympathy for you. We have got lots to do today. We have got many more of you to talk to, and we'd like you to call in as well. Even if you haven't got anything to talk about, but you just want to talk to somebody, this is the place to come to, 0344 499 1000, because we do not want you to be in any way alone. We do not want you to feel as if you are just you against the world, because we are very much on your side. You are the eyes and ears, ladies and gentlemen, of the talk radio business. And what we'd like to do is help you out whenever we can. Let's talk to Daniel, who's in Epsom. Hi, Daniel.
Mike, how are you, Chief?
Very well, sir. How are you doing?
I'm stuck at home with three kids and no work, so not very good.
No, I know. It's not great, but, you know, we're all here in it together, so let's try and figure it out.
Thing is, Mike, now I'm at home, I'm thinking we should pay teachers seven or eight times more than we pay them at the moment.
No, exactly right. Well, you know, I was quite interested in what Emma was saying there, though, about the online sort of registration, because one of the things I know that my kids are struggling with down in Sussex is just basically having a framework around which to work, you know, because it's all very well, you know, being told by your parents to do something. But if you're actually being told by the school, you've got to log in at 9 a.m. every morning to get your work for the day, and then you can do it at any point during the day. That would be good.
It would be good. I've got to give a big shout out to West Yule Primary School, because West Yule Infant and Primary School, because they've been sending out worksheets for us, and it's had a bit of structure for us with my three. I mean, I've got three under seven, so it has been a sort of a struggle, I guess. But yeah, I just wanted to say that when we're out of this, I mean, what I wanted to talk about primarily was the amount of pro-EU people that are trying to use this whole situation to stop us from leaving the EU, because I think that's completely unacceptable, and I think we have to leave. And I've got family in Italy, and I can tell you firsthand that the EU are about as popular, and they're not very popular in Italy at the moment.
No, I bet, because they basically refused to help them, didn't they?
Well, I mean, essentially, they want you to be part of this union, monetarily and financial and political union. As soon as you have a problem, you're on your own.
Yeah, I know. Great, isn't it?
And for me, that just it shows what they are. They're just a bunch of pen pushers and bureaucrats. And I give the EU 5 to 10 years. I mean, there must be people looking at the situation, like my family in Italy, Spaniards, and across the Eastern Europe, and everyone else, are thinking, this isn't working.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, all these countries, right, that are going to need massive economic assistance, if they're not going to get it from the EU, they'll get it from somewhere else. And also, what they won't do is want to put any money into the EU. So the EU will all be effectively shut down.
Mate, honestly, I just think we're better off out. So, do you know what? Moving forward, I think all trade with China needs to change. This is totally unacceptable. In effect, whether they meant it or not, they've infected the world with a killer virus, decimating our economies. I mean, look, a guy like me, Mike, I've had my own limited company for less than a year. I've had one return.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not entitled to anything. I think the most I get is £94. And do you know what? I haven't even claimed it, because the reason I haven't claimed it is because I want this country to get back on its feet.
Sure.
I don't want you £98 a week or whatever it is. I can last 3 or 4 months, but let's get back to what... I mean, for me, garden centres, for example, they're less populated than supermarkets. So why aren't they open?
Yeah.
I mean, there's more people in your average supermarket than there are garden centres. But I know a guy who owns a supermarket, who owns a garden centre, and he's dying
because... Yeah.
It's a seasonal business.
And this is the season for people to go and buy stuff. And also, this is the season where people are spending more time in their gardens. Daniel, listen, I've got to run, but thank you for the call, as ever. You're absolutely right. I can't see any reason why they could not open garden centres. I really don't think that would be a problem. I know that they'll say probably, well, we don't want people driving to them. We don't want people on the roads. Well, you know, sometimes you have to weigh one thing up against another, I suspect. But, you know, you may have a different view.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. Ian Collins coming up at 1 o'clock, of course. This now, however, is our homeschooling feature. We've had some fascinating guests on this particular part of the show. We've had Carol Vorderman teaching us about mathematics. We've had Susie Dent teaching us about words and teaching us about dictionaries and all that. We've now got another star to join up with, and it is Tim Vine, comedian, multiple winner of the Joke of the Fringe Award, because he's going to tell us how to write a joke. Tim, a very good afternoon to you.
A very, very good afternoon to you as well. Yes, I'm multiple now refers to the number two, which I like.
Well, that's right. I mean, anything more than one. The thing I really like at the moment is the sort of things that everybody's getting up to. I saw Toya Wilcox and Robert Fripp doing a little dance manoeuvre at home for everybody to watch. I'm looking at your Twitter where you appear to be stirring something in a bowl surrounded by sort of rather large bees that are attached to a hat.
Wasps. Yes.
Oh, they're wasps, are they? Okay.
And that was one of the first times I've used that prop, actually. I got someone to build it for me. I used it once where I went on stage and said, this place is buzzing.
It looks very complicated. You are the master of the one-liner, aren't you?
Oh, well, that's very kind of you. I mean, I make up one-liners a lot, yeah. I've tried longer things, but they shorten themselves for shorter jokes, yeah.
Yeah, I've got a great joke about the word contagious, but it's too filthy to say on the radio. But I'll tell it to you one time when I next see you. But I mean,
I wrote a song called Contagious. It was very catchy.
Very good. Now, we've got children listening to this segment, learning every single day about all sorts of things. Yesterday, we had a fantastic guy called Greg Smy-Rumsby on, who's an astronomist. Astronomist? Astronomer, even.
Astronomer.
An astronomer. I don't know what an astronomist is.
He was telling
us all about the pink moon, which apparently turns out not to be pink after all.
I missed it. Actually, that was last night, wasn't it? The moon,
wasn't it? I think you might be able to see it tonight as well.
Oh, OK, great.
So there will be children sitting around listening to this, and you know how they like to make fun of their parents, but, I mean, is there a trick to writing a joke?
Well, there's certainly different types of jokes. So I tend to do a lot of wordplay, and one of the things that helps is if you just find words that have two different meanings and start from that, you know, that's the sort of obvious place to start.
Yes.
So, I mean, if you take a word like, I don't know, flexible. So I went down to my local gym. I said, Mr. Nasium, I said, can you teach me how to do the splits? He said, how flexible are you? I said, I can't make Tuesdays. And in that situation, the word flexible has got two meanings, you know.
Yeah.
So you just kind of think of, probably if you want to write jokes at home, and any kids sort of listening at the moment, it's good to maybe just make a list of maybe 10 words that you think have more than one meaning.
Yes.
And then sort of try and mislead people into thinking you're referring to one meaning, and then at the end, it turns out you're referring to the other.
Yes. I had a similar one about a handyman. Who went for a job interview, and he was asked what he could do. And you can make it the joke as long as you want. So, you know, can you use a hose? No, not really. I don't know how to do that. Can you use a hedge trimmer?
Yes, I like the joke.
I don't know about this one. Can you do anything with plumbing? You know, no. It goes on and on and on and on as long as you like. And then he says, "Well, what's handy about you?" He says, "I just live around the corner."
To play on film titles and things. I haven't seen a cowboy film for ages. It's All Quiet on the Western Front.
Except All Quiet on the Western Front isn't a cowboy film.
It isn't, you're right. There is a flaw in that. But, I mean, it's sort of the instant thing is you're using it in a second meaning.
No, I get that. But that's the thing. I mean, there's nothing more annoying than a pedant who says, but hang on a minute, that doesn't work.
I know what you mean.
He's just telling
when
jokes.
I have a joke that starts like, this fridge came up to me or something like that. Yes. People go, well, wait a minute, that can't happen.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But that's the thing. I mean, I'm a big fan of what I call kind of slapstick comedy, but also verbal slapstick, which is the sort of stuff that you're doing, because it just makes you laugh out loud straight away.
Well, and also it's short normally.
Yes.
That probably means you can get away with being extra silly because you do it before anyone goes, well, wait a minute, that's a bit daft. You're on to the next one, you know.
And so have you ever done that sort of very long, elongated type joke that some comedians do if they're doing a stand-up sort of routine?
Well, I have a few sort of... I had a thing I used to do, which where I'd say to someone in the audience, I said, give me a subject and I'll make up a joke about the subject.
Right.
And then they'd say something like, I don't know... cycling or something. And then I said to someone, I said, okay, well, give me someone famous. They say the Queen Mother and an object and a banana or something. And I'd say, so the Queen Mother was cycling and she had a banana attached to the front of her forehead with sellotape and she was cycling and she was getting faster. And I go on for ages and ages and I go, and it was sort of, da, 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 just as it seems like it's getting to some sort of peak, I go, give me another subject.
That's great. But, I mean, can you teach yourself to be funny, do you think?
That's a good question. Can you teach yourself to be funny? Well, I think the way to... human beings are naturally funny, I think. We're sort of naturally...
Many people are funny without knowing it. And then there are the ones that I really dislike are the ones who think they're funny but actually aren't.
Yes, well, indeed, yeah. I mean, the audiences are always the judge. Many's the time I've written a joke and thought to myself, I reckon that's good. And then I've tested it with an audience... Sadly, me standing in front of an audience in this day and age is currently not allowed.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, it must be tough to be a comedian at this point in time.
Well, it is. it's for trying out stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you can still do the thing of doing some silly video or whatever and putting it on Twitter. But if you really want to try out, particularly stand-up comedy is like a conversation between the audience and the comic. You need that. You need the two things to be going backwards and forwards. You sort of can't just throw stand-up comedy into the abyss. Well, you can, but you don't know how much of it is really funny until you try it with an audience.
Yeah, right. And this will be the first time. I don't know if you would still have been doing the Edinburgh Festival this year, but I mean,
that was the thing that sort of stopped. Was, you know, everything just suddenly dropped off a cliff because I was trying out lots of new stuff because I was going to do a new stand-up show at Edinburgh in August. So that's kind of put on hold. But hopefully, by the time next August comes around, we'll all be up there with doubly great.
We'd like to think so. The Plastic Elvis tour as well, is that something?
That's been rescheduled to the autumn. Yeah,
that was in
May. Well, that's me coming on dressed. I mean, this is a bit hard to explain. Well, it's not hard to explain, but it's hard to understand why I'm doing it. Other than it's a vanity project, but
yeah.
I dress up as Elvis,
right?
And I talk as Elvis in between songs and stuff. I have a brilliant band, 5-piece band, and we do a whole lot of Elvis songs.
Oh, really? That sounds good.
Yeah, it's great fun.
And do you talk like him? Like the kind of?
I do. I mean, it's all sort of, it's fantastic. You know, I was raised on gospel, really.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. That was me doing him.
And do you do all the various stages of Elvis, or which stage?
I just do the stage that we're on that night. But
very good.
I kind of wearing a big plastic jumpsuit thing, which looks a bit like the 68 comeback special. That's about as close as I get to looking like him.
Is it the kind of the Vegas years then?
It's a mix of stuff. It's quite a lot of 70s stuff there, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Brilliant. So, now let me ask
you. Give me a subject. Let's try it. Let's workshop this for the people listening. Give me a subject.
Coronavirus.
Okay.
You can't make a joke about that. No, I'll come up with another one. Hang on. How about...
On the subject of the coronavirus, I was in the garden with my mum the other day, communicating with her through French windows.
Oh, yeah.
Which wasn't easy, because my French is terrible.
See, that's very good. What about hay fever? It's coming into the season.
Yes, you know, I used to do a hay fever joke. Now, what was that? Yeah, well, hay fever. I mean, listen, when you're writing a joke, even just even if it ends up being not particularly funny, at least it shows the way you could write it. So you could take hay fever, and that could, for example, be someone who can't stop going, hey, like that. I mean, if kids are listening to that, that might be, you know, hey, yeah, and it turns out he's got hay fever. You know, I mean,
it sounds like somebody from Liverpool.
Funny, but, yeah,
hey!
But that shows the kind of, you're taking two different meanings of it.
Yes,
you know,
that's good.
You know, so that would be a way of doing it.
Yeah. Well, listen, it's been brilliant. Tim, no wonder you are the funniest man alive. And thank you very much indeed.
I may be the only man alive.
Well, you cheered us all up for a start, because one of the things that we need in this day and age is to be cheered up. Are you doing stuff on YouTube and things as well?
Well, I've got a YouTube channel of stuff that I filmed it all sort of before, so that comes out every Monday, a sort of minute and a half of nonsense. But I am chucking a few bits and bobs up, you know, just at home anyway as well.
All right. I'll finish up with a tweet. I've just got a tweet from Carol Decker, famously from Topow fame. She says, I went all the way to Selfridges the other day. They don't sell them. Really annoying.
Very good.
Well done, Carol.
I used to do a joke about Batman came up to me and he smashed a vase over my head and he said Topow. I said, don't you mean Kapow? He said, no, I've got China in my hand.
Very good. Brilliant. Listen, well, you've certainly cheered me up, and I'm sure you've cheered a lot of other people up. And if you're out there learning how to write a joke, now you know. Tim, thank you very much indeed. Tim Vine, multiple winner of the Joke of the Fringe Award. I feel so much better already. Laughter genuinely, if you can say it, is the best medicine. Coming up next, James Martin's going to be here, celebrity chef and author. He's got a new book out, Islands to Highlands. Maybe we'll get a joke out of him as well. This is Talk Radio.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio. The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio. James Martin is going to be joining us very shortly with his new book, Islands to Highlands, which is fascinating. It looks like a great cookbook. He's going all over Britain, basically, and using all the local produce from various different places to cook and give you recipes for. By the way, if you haven't seen it yet, I've also started a new podcast called MG's Kitchen, which I might well ask him about. But first, let's talk to Lewis, who is in Cambridge. Hello, Lewis.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Yeah, very well, sir. What can I do for you?
I was just calling because I recently saw this tweet from my local police department, which is Cambridgeshire Police. They've released this online form that allows members of the public to report individuals that they think are breaching the coronavirus restrictions.
Right.
And I've just been reading through the comments, and it seems to have been getting quite a negative response from most people. I was just kind of questioning how effective it would be, and if it was kind of offering people an easy way to kind of report people maybe for not too serious issues or things that they might think might be going on but aren't actually going on. So
right.
I'm kind of questioning that.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a letter, funnily enough, that I've been sent from my children's school from the Surrey and Sussex Police, which is all about basically making sure that your children are not doing anything they shouldn't be doing. And it says, stay at home unless shopping for basic necessities as infrequently as possible. One form of exercise a day, for example, a run, walk or cycle alone or with members of the household. But they're saying basically if people are outside their premises without reasonable excuses, i.e. children, teenagers, whatever, they will fine them.
Yeah, which makes complete sense because obviously they shouldn't be doing that. I was just kind of not concerned about it, but just it maybe is offering people a too easy a way of reporting something that maybe isn't what they think it is. I just wonder if it is an effective way of kind of policing the situation or not.
Yes, I mean, I think if there's groups of young people, they should be easy enough to spot. Lewis, thanks. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, some more tomorrow. But, you know, it's a striking of a balance, isn't it? It's about making sure that people are doing what they should be doing, not being reckless, not being sort of dangerous in some way, shape or form, and just not hanging around, because that's not what we're supposed to be doing. But one of the things we can do, and one of the things I've been doing a lot of as well, is cooking, because when you're in the house and you're isolating either on your own or with members of your family, cooking is one of the great things that you can do. And I'm about to speak to one of the great cooks, James Martin. James, a very good afternoon to you.
How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Thanks for joining us. Where are you at the moment?
I'm quite fortunate. I've got a garden, so I'm sat in my garden at the moment.
Very nice. It's not as sunny today as it was yesterday, but
it's pretty all right down in Hampshire. It's blue skies where we are
very
now.
Very nice. So. Excellent. Well, I'm loving the sound of this new book, The Great British Adventure, because you've basically hit the road and you're going all over the country. And I've got my first question. I'm looking at all the things that you're doing. Traditional singing hinnies in Northumberland. What are they?
Yeah, well, when you put them on the griddle plate, the sound that they make when you put them on the griddle plate, they're supposed to make this sizzling sound.
Oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, it's a simple little dough, usually done with currants and stuff like that. Just basically pan. They've done on a skillet, really, and I did it on the barbecue overlooking Holy Island.
I love that area.
That coastline area is amazing.
Yes.
The East Coast, and went over across to Puffin Island, where there's a breeding colony of puffins. There's thousands of them over there as well. So
fantastic.
It's a right over there.
So is your book kind of looking at regional cooking, as it were, in different parts of Britain, or just regional stuff that you
it's
can get when you're there?
Regional stuff, really. It's celebrating how amazing this country is, and travelling a little bit further from north to south. So it starts off in the Isles of Scilly, which started off on Monday, and venturing over to Jersey, Guernsey as the show goes on, and then right up to the Highlands, and then up into Shetland, It shows you the country at all its glory. It's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, there are some fantastic parts of this country. I mean, I lived in Scotland for a while, and we used to drive off at the weekends because it's so easy to get to the Highlands. And I don't know if you ever found a place called Apple Cross, which is like a sort of a mountain pass, if you like, which is kind of brings you down towards Skye, and just the most beautiful part of the world that so few people have even seen.
I think the same could be said about a lot of places. You know, the Isles of Scilly, I had so much response from the show on Monday when we showed that, and didn't realise that it was, you know, it's 20 miles off the coast of Cornwall, and the beaches are like the Caribbean.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, because I've never actually been to the Isles of Scilly. I've got friends who used to go there as kids. Like, it was one of those things they did every single year. But it's quite remarkable, isn't it?
It is beautiful, and it's literally, like I said, it's a stone's throw away. And you can say that a lot of places. You know, Rathnell Island in Northern Ireland as well was another place famous for the kelp.
Mm.
You know, you can see that all the way around the whole of the UK, really. Obviously, we're to Jersey and Guernsey, but but there are little hidden gems all over the place.
Right, and do you find the little hidden gems of sort of dishes as well that the locals cook that you don't get anywhere else?
In Shetland, there's a place in Shetland. There's a guy making this salt cod. You have it in Spain quite a lot. They turn it into bacalao, which is the potatoes, and they cook it in milk. But there they have this thing called the hairy tatties, which is they take this fish called piltok, and they salt it, and then you cook it in water or cook it in milk and mix it together with potatoes. But they have these amazing sort of these little fish cakes.
Wow.
You can buy it online as well, so you can get your piltok and your salt cod all the way from Shetland.
Yeah, because, I mean, tragically, at the moment, none of us can follow in your footsteps at the moment.
Well, no, but it gives you inspiration for when you know, we are allowed out, that I think there's going to be a lot more, you know, certainly a lot more staycations happening anyway, because the ability to travel around the world is... It's not going to be.
No.
That's not going to be switched on straight away for sure.
Well, also, I think people will want to and should want to sort of prop up the economy in the UK before they start doing anybody else's.
I mean, I've been saying this for years, you know, about produce and you know, we've relied so much on supermarkets. Well, you're realising now that you know, by alienating the butchers and the fishmongers and the veg shops, this is what we're in the scenario now.
Right. And so, curiously, you know, when all the queues were forming and people were just taking everything out of the supermarkets, it was the smaller butchers and the fishmongers who actually were the lifeline because, you know, they were still able to provide the stuff.
You found that as sort of the restaurants are closed and the hotels are closed, the suppliers to those restaurants are stepping up to the plate. So I've been working with suppliers that used to supply my restaurant to let them diversify. They're donating about 11,000 boxes a day that they're delivering now.
Really?
Just a small amount compared with what they would normally do, deliver to restaurants around the UK, but that's growing. You know, it's taking pressure away from the supermarkets, but showing people you can actually, there is an outlet, you can buy fresh fish, you can buy fresh meat, you can buy fresh veg. And the advantage is now that we live in a climate, this is not 70 years ago when you were sat in a house and there was stuff being rained on us.
Yeah.
Now you've got the internet, you've got everything. You know, so fortunate to have what we've got.
Well, we've also got people like you providing us with great ideas for things that we can cook. Because, I mean, I'm probably slightly older than you. I grew up in the 70s, right? And I was there when the three-day week came in and we had 1 hour of electricity in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And we only, my parents were both from Scotland, and we basically ate soup and stew and mince and potatoes.
Well, I bet you ate well, though.
Well, we did. But, you know, we had this thing called Graham soup, which I still make today, which is a little vegetable soup they used to make in a pressure cooker. But, you know, there wasn't, the smallest metro now was the biggest shop we had, you know, and that was it.
No, it is. I mean, we're quite fortunate to have stuff delivered to us, and the accessibility of stuff is still there. To be fair, there's more chefs cooking now on social media than I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yes.
And there's more people cooking at home, which is fantastic.
Yeah, well, I mean, without wishing to big myself up, I've just started doing a cooking at home podcast because
one of the many. I've refrained from doing that, you see. I'm just going to do a chat every Saturday with a chef every Saturday. I do it on Instagram. I'll do an Instagram live chat with them. But I think people don't want to see me cooking every single day. They'll get me enough during the week and then on a weekend as well.
So. Well, you've fortunately got a television show, though, so that's you know, you're ahead of me and by 100 miles there. But it's just great fun. And, you know, I thought it would be something that nobody would really be that interested in because it started off with putting pictures out and stuff like that. And some people go, oh, why are you showing us that? But actually, people are so bored at the moment that they'll watch anything and listen to anything. You know.
It is. I mean, the popularity of food, we all have to eat for sure. And you know, there are some positives that's coming out of a very dark situation that we're in. That the positives are people are talking, people are having a conversation, and people are helping each other out. You know, which is fantastic.
I've spent
the last 2 weeks making so much pasta. I can't even tell you, but I've probably made about 400 kilos of pasta because I thought, what can I do to the village where I live?
And
we're quite remote where I live, not remote compared with the Highlands, but. But I thought, rather than just leave a tray of eggs out and a bit of flour, I said, if I make some pasta, I got the pasta machine from the restaurant. It's a big commercial pasta machine.
Right.
And I spent every day making 50 kilos of pasta.
Wow, that's brilliant. Because, of course, it's still quite hard to get in some shops, pasta.
Not here. How much do you want? I've got tons of it.
I don't know why people are buying so much of it, though. Because, you know, it's like, well, it's not going to go away anywhere, is it? Now, I've got a question for you, because I've just had this sent in from somebody.
Yeah.
They're making a shakshuka, which I've never made. I presume that's some kind of Middle Eastern dish.
Yeah.
He says, and this is Johnny, he says that he's put too much cumin in it. How does he balance that out? I would suggest he just makes a bucket load of it.
Yeah, just make twice the amount. Well, cumin's all right. It's not a bad spice. Lemon usually cuts a little bit out of it. But it sounds daft, but a touch of butter will take the rawness of spice out. If you've got a lot of spice on there, stuff like yogurt, dairy stuff, yogurt, yes, cream, butter, that kind of stuff. Lemon will take the hit out of it.
Ah, okay, interesting. And as far as your show is concerned, have you come across anything when you were making that you didn't know about, like a food that you suddenly discovered?
I didn't know. 80% of the places that where I visited, I'd never been before.
Okay.
So when the show airs further on, you've got 4 weeks of it, yeah, but certainly the final week when we end up in Shetland and end up in the Highlands, I mean, the stuff up there is just breathtaking.
Yes, oh, fantastic.
Absolutely spectacular. But there's places all over. There's an amazing place that produces eels, Loch Ney, which is one of the largest freshwater locks in Europe.
I like a smoked eel.
Well, 100% of the eel that they catch there is all sent to Holland.
All right.
But the guy who fishes every day, every single day, be doing it now, every day, his line goes out. There's a 400 hooks on this line. He pulls it all in by hand.
Wow.
But that literally, and I cooked this freshwater, almost like a freshwater herring that I've never seen before.
Mm.
And I cooked it by this lock. And you'd think a lock would be flat. It was actually like the sea.
I mean,
we were getting drenched. It was literally been out in Force 5 in the middle of this lock. It was amazing.
The weather up there is incredible, though, isn't it?
No, it was incredible. It's only about 3 miles south of Belfast, 5 miles south of Belfast. But, yeah, that was amazing. So there's lots of things that I hadn't, you know, seen before. And,
right.
And 80% of the places where we visited, I've never been before.
Fabulous. And I said at the start there was a book. I wasn't sure if there was, actually. Is there going to be a book as well?
There is a book, yeah. Yeah, there is a book out now, is the usual thing. But, yeah, we did it before all this sort of happened. But, the book's out the same name now.
Right. Brilliant stuff. Well, listen, James, good luck with it. Thank you very much indeed. We shall keep an eye on you to see where you're going next. And we'll talk to you soon. James Martin with his new show, Great British Adventure, and a book as well, of course. Lots more for us to do. I can, just before I talk to Ian Collins, I can say Boris Johnson remains in ICU, is the breaking news, but is responding to treatment. So that's a bit of good news to finish this particular show with.
Talk Radio. Across the UK. Online. On DAB. And on your smartphone. Speaker, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1 Monday to Friday on Talk Radio via DAB online or via the Talk Radio app. And if you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us on 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
Mid-morning with Mike Graham. Talk Radio.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.